Welcome to Awake versus Aware, which is a presentation that aims to break the illusions of current events, offer tangible solutions, and prompts the listener to keep their hand off the mind break.
Welcome to the Awake versus Aware presentation, taped on February 11th, 2026. This will be a fun roundtable. We got Kalius here, Sanji, and Link, previous guests on our Rumble channel on the Cosmic Reality radio station. Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hey.
Greetings.
Awesome. Yeah, this is the first time. Glad we could get everybody. We tried to get this sooner, but and we were trying to get Lance too, but he's off and on with things. He tried. I think one of the first topics we'll get into is the viral use of the word satanic. Now, I understand where the usage is coming from because of this whole Jeffrey Epstein file thing going on. At the forefront of the usual things of flesh eating and horror movie type of stuff done on, you know, quote unquote, innocent people or whatever, unwilling. And I get that. I understand that. But the codified word, you know, that's not Christian based is meant to be applied in the terms of going against the status quo. And you know, this material has been around since the 60s. Now, we're not talking about Crowley or Blavatsky, anything like that. We're talking about the Church of Satan definition because they were the first to define that and actually apply it for within a civilized, lawful order in terms of creativity. Yeah. So I know you guys understand that, but I think it's interesting and I wrote a quick thing here. Let me see if I can find it. No matter how intelligent they seem, white light good guys using the word satanic for anything they don't like stratifies them into the into the very dream sharing hell they condemn those not like them. The old ones, hyper dimensional and snare mints, easily drown their live fire. Back to sleep, deathists. So what it is, and I take this from Chris Knowles, and he was the one that pointed this observation out, which is, if you use that word, not necessarily that it's the Christian definition of it, but just the fact of using it extinguishes all further deep dives into what these ceremonies and rituals, like, for example, the Winter Olympics had certain symbolism, halftime Super Bowl, these past kind of public displays, whatever they may be, false flags or psyops, but you're not able to get into the mind control that's happening, the frequency attacks, the invisible war that's been outlined in the Apocalypse Culture book back in the 80s. And now obviously it's proliferated, Invisible War 2.0, to all these kinds of things, optogenetics, using light to mess around with neurochemistry. And so Chris Knowles' books and his interviews outlines the Mithraic, the pagan, the Babylonian, these original meanings of these things that are being pointed out, rather than just doing the good guy badge approach of, oh, it's satanic stuff, and then like we can go back to being good guys. So what do you guys think?
I feel something just from everything you said there, but that's all I had to say about it for now.
Yeah, I mean, I empathize with the feeling of people who are unwilling and they're being hurt, sure. But if we want to get to the true meaning of these things in terms of the art of invisibility, these occult terms we know, law of the forbidden, law of the claw, law of the jungle, and especially with the madness being ramped up. Now, obviously, we do look within, and from the black flame of the light of consciousness, looking without and seeing and operating from that, right? And in terms of how it's useful for the individual is kind of where I'm coming from. And one of my, my college major was in multimedia, digital media. And that's why I have partly a foot in the door of these kinds of things. So it is an interesting examination of psychological behavior and manipulation, lesser magic, as in, yeah, psychological manipulation. But I mean, it's all interesting as far as, I mean, not just the entertainment factor, but stratification. Comments?
Well, the dichotomous aspect, you know, the simplistic way of, you know, good versus evil, and those old themes are, it's like child's play. It's like a child's toy, basically. It's but the interesting part about all this, especially now with the Epstein files and all that, and, you know, trying to label everything, you know, like a satanic ring, basically, is a very interesting, it's kind of fascinating to me that it's being portrayed in such a simplistic way. You know, it kind of goes along with the slow roll release aspect of this type of information. Everything has to go through filter after filter after filter, and it has to be dripped out ever so slowly. And so it's as if people are being hypnotized by a little dangly cat toy, you know. And so, but the part that gets my interest is that I remember, you know, when I first got involved with organizations like the Church of Satan, the absolute, just complete denial of any wrongdoing by anybody at any time, at any place during this whole thing, especially in the 70s and 80s, to me just seemed kind of preposterous. You know, the satanic panic, quote unquote, in the 80s was, if you actually look into it, it's just basically the FBI saying we investigated ourselves and found we did nothing wrong. And that to me is just, and that's always the argument. And it always has been, especially with those people in those organizations. So it, to me, I always thought that was silly. I was like, that's very much a knee-jerk reaction in and of itself. And it's just, it's kind of silly. I've always found this whole dichotomous thing with all of it to be really, really, really silly. So that's really my two cents on it. I think that there's always more going on underneath the surface. I don't profess to know what. I'm not involved with those organizations anymore, or people, or really too much people that are in them. So my guess is as good as any's, but the whole public framing of it, the way it's just been thrown out there, the way it has, is just, it's just ridiculous. And the retorts to it are just as ridiculous most of the time. So that's just my take on it.
Yeah. The good versus evil superficially is useful up to a point. What's even more useful is centralized versus decentralized. And that can be applied to any field, especially after the whole COVID thing, where rather than being at the altar of authority and institutions, and as we move towards the AI, what do you call it, boom explosion or bubble even, that there is a things are becoming more hands-on for us. And let me see what there's a guy I follow, Archaics, and I wanted to read this because one of the things as far as mental technology is, the world is your mirror. Reality reflects emotional expectations. And I think this was a response to a post on X regards to, I think, religion. I feel the same way about your flying Jesus, walking on water, feeding 5,000 with a basket, raising the dead. You need human sacrifice to save you and then gaslight yourself. What is this? That is different than the Bronze Age institution of human sacrifice. Christianity is disguised Jew worship, and its followers are hypocrites and fall for every psyop in the field. You've sacrificed a lot more than your time investing your faith in the complete fiction. The immortal within has no need of anything in the materium to save them. the carnalizing of the Christ concept is what Christianity is, the ultimate deception. And, you know, I grew up Catholic and went through all the rituals as a kid and then have questioned the authority and ordination, which they couldn't give a satisfying answer. And it's that whole, you know, in the right wing media, you hear this whole thing of, oh, the bad guys always use inversion. And that's how they do the predictive programming, and they need to tell us what they do for us to. It's a kind of energy harvesting. But the way he says this is that, and what I got the insight was, it Christians need the human sacrifice of Jesus to feel good about themselves and to be saved. So that's just another form of human sacrifice, and no Christian has ever said that. I thought that was a huge realization. And I did a show with Kalis here, Cosmic Soup, on Kevin Annette, who is able to go into these churches and show documentation and get these people out. It's like, no, you're an indigenous land. Get the hell out of here. You're not, you don't have authority. And calling out the crimes of the Vatican, he wrote this book, Dethroning a Rogue Power. And one of the things he was pointing out, I think this was a Sarah Westall interview back in June, that it's a form of energy vampirism, the cross. It was originally based, I mean, the cross showed up 300 plus years after Christ, which is around the time the Vatican started. And the cross originated from like the layout of a town, and the way that that configuration harnesses and focuses energy, that's a form of energy harvesting. It's like, oh man, so the people who've, and supposedly, you know, we know about the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, but there's another whole bloodline above them, which one of them being the Pesurs, who supposedly the Vatican is works for them. And so, you know, the supposed rulers of this world, you know, they set up this whole thing of the slave religions, and it's pretty ingenious. But the fact that it's a kind of vampirism, and even the Satanic Bible, we get warned about psychic vampirism. And then, like, in a lot of ways, it's a good time to be alive. We're in the apocalypse of the revealing. And, you know, for me, having been raised Christian for so long, first couple decades of my life, and then uncovering these things and deconstructing them, I thought is, you know, pretty insightful and fun, these kinds of revelations.
Yeah, and it's the fun part about it is there's this sense I get. I mean, not really a sense, it kind of seems obvious to me at this point, and it's going to sound maybe a little conspiratorial, but it's as if everything's getting destroyed. It's as if every single big major event, you know, like the Epstein Files, for example, I think that's just intended to destroy governments. And the sort of, I guess you could say, like the Agenda 2030 stuff is basically going to take its place. Stuff like that. Maybe not that specifically, but it feels like, you know, even the church has been co-opted by the state. You know, the popes are now, you know, advocating all of the same things the states are, you know, the state governments are. So it just feels like it's all coming down. It's all crumbling. And so it's a very, very fascinating time for sure. And so it's good to remain optimistic. I'm not so optimistic about what's coming down the pipe as far as what they're going to replace it with, but you know, who knows, that could fail as well. And so, yeah, the old world is dying, and the new one is being born as we speak. And it's very fascinating.
Yeah, this is curious, especially for me, because the valley I live, Oakland, San Francisco, Berkeley, and we know that the alphabet agencies have funded and supported a lot of this. These people, these front boys, front men, Bill Gates, Bezos, Zuckerberg, you know, these names, they didn't come up on their own. These are all well-funded. You research enough, it's like, yeah, they all connect That's back to the intelligence agencies. And it makes sense because when you're talking about...
We said that at the same time.
What's that?
We said that at the same time. I said, we said it makes sense at the same time.
Yeah, and this is about bringing back control to you. But when you have optogenetics and the part of the formula of MK Ultra back during the mafia days of the casinos and using light to control people, blue light to diminish. And I'm a victim of this as anybody is. You know, I have my blue blockers, red glasses at night, but it's, you know. So as far as the technocracy aspect, but it's interesting. It's a tool, and these things are double-edged swords, right? With any kind of technology, whether it's conscious technology, and then you have with AI being... a guy follows Zach Voorhees, the Google whistleblower. He's really good follow, and how they're just wiping out all these jobs. But at the same time, it's like, if you are able to, like, for example, Mike Adams Helfinger, he's able to create these books within minutes of whatever topic. And then these big companies will come and hire you just with a little bit of training. So it's as much as there's a loss and devastation, there's opportunity just as much. And we have that with energy technologies too. Before the call, we were talking about energy devices, different kinds of resonators, cloud busters. I know Sanji here has familiarity with tensor rings and link with what were you calling it again? I forget the name. Was it cloud buster or Orgone devices, that's it.
Yeah, the Orgone.
Yeah, since you had mentioned electroculture as well.
Okay, yeah, if you guys want to get into that a little bit, how you guys found that, because the station's pretty familiar with that. Oh, before you do, I just want to promote, we do have a specific podcast that talks all about that. So myself and Kalis, we got into this podcast, Shungite Show, Shungite Reality. We did a couple days ago on how to combat glyphosate, since that's big with the bread that's been talking about in Florida and different energy approaches. So that was, I think we did two plus hours. You can find that on Rumble. Just type in Shungite Reality. And then his experiences with Shungite against like a cell tower. He talks about, yeah, guys, go ahead and talk about how, and whoever can go first, as far as how you found out about these energy devices, experiences with Shungite, tensor rings.
I was hoping to maybe chime in on the just one little thought on the satanic aspect. Please. Before we moved on to that. You know, for me, it's not that I have to try, but I just don't. You know, this is our conversation. Is kind of the first I'm hearing about this Epstein stuff. Or, I mean, I'm familiar with Epstein, but this is kind of the first I'm hearing about this kind of connection. And, you know, vaguely seeing headlines in passing about Pizzagate and Epstein and this kind of stuff. But I wasn't really, I just really don't pay attention to the news. I feel like it's really a distraction.
Yeah, me either.
If when you watch the news, if you just pay attention to what's going on with people's energy and where it's going, I don't think it's for me personally, I'm only trying, you know, I'm very selective about my influences, and I am really trying to just create a world of my own and live in that. And it's a really old story. I mean, the word Satanist is, you know, before Anton LaVey was a literary fiction. It was a slander. It was something that other religions used to slander other paths that they didn't agree with. You know, and a lot of that got mixed up into different pagan paths. And then sometimes people kind of took on some of that imagery, because if you're being hunted down like witch trials, you know, and you're fewer in number, it helps to seem ferocious and maybe a little bit scary. So the old ways that people used to live in harmony with nature became demonized. And that's why today we have this connection to it. And I don't know if we're a Christian society, but amongst the Christian segments of our society, and it's the same behavior. It's hysteria and moral superiority. And those things are not a good look, and they're not a good mix. And we see the repetition of that in new times with these political movements where you kind of have the new church ladies now, and they're the modern hysterics that want to get hyper-moralistic and, you know, act superior to other people. And it's kind of this victim mentality where being a victim leads to acting morally superior. And a lot of, not all of the conspiracy theorists, but a lot of them seem to be coming from that place where they feel powerless and they need an explanation for these great powerful forces out there that are controlling the world. And I'm not saying that none of that is going on, but I tend to think of it more as people being shitty more than, you know, there's no real codified path for that kind of satanic panic Satanism. And I think that's what we're saying, you know, when people are saying that that doesn't really exist. You know, Richard Ramirez existed. And, you know, if you tell someone enough times, hey, this is what Satanists do, and it's all these horrible things, and if that appeals to that person, now they think, oh, well, that's what a Satanist is, so that's what I am. And they're going to go around and identify that way and do that. But that's Christians giving them that definition. For me, it feels like a really old story that's been around a long time that is just continued in our society, and it's just it's a form of hysteria, and Anton LaVey took that word and kind of did like what African Americans did with the N-word. It's like, we're going to take this dirty word and we're going to use it for ourselves. And so if people find power in that, I think that that's beautiful. And, but everyone has their own interpretation of what that means, you know?
I 100% agree. And I would add that a lot of this victim mentality, this sort of sweeping one's personality into the dustbin of the collective dustbin of all these different oppressors is incredibly common now. It's almost as if most major cities, most urban environments operate like this to some high level. Portland, for example, is 100% like this. It's difficult to come across anyone that's not oppressed in some form or another, and that has to make that part of their personality. And so,
yeah,
it's quite a phenomenon. It's so widespread that on every end of the spectrum, somebody's, you know, a victim of something to a larger degree than what's probably reasonable. And so it's they're just a lot of people just these days base their entire personalities around these little things. And it's almost like they're being instructed to do it. You know, most of our, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, the most of our education system is starting to be geared to promote these things. So it's people are being trained to just think, you know, there's some big boogeyman that's, you know, screwing up their lives. And it's there's one thing about them, you know, psychologically, or, and that's another big one in my opinion, but, you know, physically, stuff like that, that, you know, there are things about them that people hate, and, you know, they need to, you know, so these subgroups form and they become quite militant. And so it's quite a phenomenon. It's so widespread now. I mean, we used to see this with, you know, certain things here and there, but now it's just, it's almost like it's everywhere. And so,
yeah, I find it interesting. COVID was an interesting mix of contagion, hysteria, and moral superiority. And I think it is the same kind of morals that we're seeing. I don't think that that's all Christians do or have done, but there's certain branches of those kinds of hyper-moralistic kind of fire and brimstone people, and they can be very dangerous. You know, growing up in that environment, if you were not lockstep with those kinds of people, it definitely felt dangerous. And so for me, yeah, I think it's important people keep their wits about them and keep in mind, you know, who they're talking to when they're discussing these issues or, you know, contemplating this stuff. Because if people have a story in their head that these people are evil, then they're justified in acting however horribly they want to. So that, to me, feels like against the free society that we have, you know, that we're supposed to have. Anyways, not to hone too much on that. It feels like a form of hysteria that people are, the devil's a boogeyman that people can, you know. It also gives people just a huge out. They don't really have to think deeply about Epstein or whatever might that have been about. And then if people are dressing it up around that, it just feels like that's not a real path of like that anyone's following. That's like someone dressing up like the Jolly Green Giant. So when they molest little kids, the kid says, "Oh, the big green man touched me." And then no one knows what to do with that, because it's like this unbelievable thing that people can't really do you see what I'm saying? So it becomes a way for criminals to hide their behavior. So if anything is going on, I would suspect it's in the realm of that rather than some actual people who are actually interested in anything occult.
And that's exactly right. And the aspect of, you know, like the term itself, you know, Satanists, those who take the name and wear it, is that do it out. One of the things I've noticed is those that have taken that title, there seems to be different levels of stratification in regards to, you know, there's a hierarchy with this type of stuff too. And I mean, it's like that with everything. You know, Anton LaVey was correct about that as far as society's form and, you know, hierarchy and stratification. And the ones that I've always, you know, I label myself as a Satanist. I use the term, but I don't go around advertising. I don't wear Baphomet hoodies or, you know, stuff like that. I don't wear any jewelry that announces this type of affiliation with me personally. And I've discovered, especially out here, that when people outwardly proclaim these things, you know, they tattoo themselves with occult symbology, and, you know, they don't really understand. Most of them don't really understand anything about it. It's just a cool label now.
I've found the same. And most people, if they're wearing a Baphomet, if you ask them, "Hey, what's that about?" they don't know what it's about.
It's just something cool to do now, and yeah. And so it's that sort of
a lot of the time. That's what it is.
Most of the time, yeah. It's an aesthetic thing. And the sort of counterculture that was created around this term has now, I think, become so widespread. It's become the culture in most places.
It's backwards.
And it's something to see, because, like I said, there's levels upon levels with all of it. And the ones the few that I speak to personally, you would never know that they were involved with this stuff. They go to work, they pay their taxes, they do their, you know, they do the normal citizen thing, and you would never guess that this is what they were into. And because they don't advertise it, and it's the ones that seem to advertise it the loudest seem to be the most insufferable. And it's almost like this
Catholic.
Well, basically, yeah, when it comes down to it, you know, they're just some form of silly, you know, their philosophy, the personal philosophy that they adhere to typically doesn't go very far, if it goes anywhere at all. And so we have noticed this cultural shift in regards to this. And that's why I mentioned, you know, to kind of play devil's advocate with this a little bit, just to explain it just a little bit further. I don't want to take too much time on this one thing, but it's interesting to see just how widespread the animosity is towards Christians. And again, it's like with any major religious group, they all have this sort of victim complex to where they're always persecuted. That's like the main theme with most Christians, is that, you know, you're just going to be persecuted. That's just the way it is. You know, they were fed to the lions, you know, by the Romans, mm-hmm. and crucified by Diocletian. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just what we do. We're just persecuted. And, you know, same thing with the Jews. What's that?
It's almost a cliche at this point to be,
well, yeah,
you know, the victim in that way. You know, obviously I don't like to paint people with a broad brush, because there's so many people who may identify as Christian and they still, you know, behave very life affirming, and they're not, you know, telling people that they're going to go to hell if they're, you know, so there are lots of people who just really aren't really practicing it. But I can break bread with people of any denomination. It's more that people are able to do the same. And when I see people can't do that, it feels like they have a lot of maturing to do, you know?
Well, yeah, and I was similar to that when I was younger. I didn't want anything to do with Christianity or Judaism or anything like that, and I was pretty much against it. And there's a fun quote from the movie The Libertine with Johnny Depp. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that, but the king basically tells Johnny Depp's character, he goes, "It's fun to be against things, you know, but at some point you have to be for things as well." And so this attitude of like going around and just despising things just to despise them is not useful. And again, it's a sign of maturity. You grow up a bit, and I certainly did. And
it's
and
like
now
the contrarian archetype.
Oh yeah, and I mean, and nowadays I'm able to go into church, and I actually do some collaboration with ministers as far as psychological, you know, stuff like that for men. And so
My family are not the enemy. Like I could kind of like relate to them. Like they're just like people who want to hang out together for the most part. You know, they don't even understand half of what they're being taught. Like the old Baptist up here anyway.
And that's usually the case. I mean, that's again, there's stratification with all of it. And so
yeah,
I've
like
never
the
understood.
Mason's Lodge. It's just people wanting to hang out, you know?
Right, yeah. Like business owners just wanting to put on their robes and yeah, it's just basic, you know, stratification, levels upon levels. And so, but yeah, my whole point was basically the sort of animosity towards Christians has always been just as unwarranted as a lot of Satanists have felt, at least the outwardly ones, have always felt about their persecution. And so it's interesting. It's a kind of a dichotomy that seems to push back upon each other. Like they seem to be constantly in this wrestling match.
Makes sense. And I've definitely I went completely against what they stood for, but that was just like, you know, that rebellious archetype, or just, you know, being raised within that sort of culture or whatever. But you, like, it's cyclical, and you come back around to it just like anything. And a lot of what we do has a lot of the same principles that they uphold, you know, just like don't be shitty, be good to each other, and people like to get together and everybody will cook and hang out or whatever.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, basically, yeah, I mean, it's just how to function as a normal human being, you know, as normal as you possibly can for, you know, a society that you want to live in and see function correctly and ultimately serve you at some point as an individual. So it's, I mean, those are all just very basic, you know, just how to live how to live properly, I think, in a functioning organism like a society. So.
Yeah, I mean, based on the stuff that I've found, like, if the cross is a vampiric symbol, then the Baphomet is a, let me see, let me find the source for this seriously. It's the Matt Beall podcast, Beall, interviewing Freddy Silva, The Watchers, Sacred Sites, on November 13th, 2025, talking about the Templars and the whole Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and Mary Magdalene and Jesus kind of thing. But when you talk about the Templar treasures and then who they were following, which was John the Baptist, and the Templars, and I think the exact quote was around the 2-hour and 6-minute mark of the podcast, where the Templars were working with the Sufis in unearthing these treasures, which were from the Mandians, the what do you call it, the system that John the Baptist was upholding. And we understand from Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince's books that Da Vinci even followed that same underground stream by having the forefinger raised up of the John the Baptist symbol. And so the Templars working with the Sufis and understanding the word Baphomet is basically the head of John the Baptist. And Freddy Silva does have books on that. I'm going to be buying his Templar book based on that interview. But he is also aware of different kinds of resurrection, out-of-body rituals in his book, The Art of Resurrection, which we're going to do a show on in the future, and maybe interview him as far as his take on living forever and his own communing with the gods and these other entities and like the Great Pyramid. But it's, you know, how far do people want to take this into the true, pure, original meaning of these things, and what is its usefulness? And I apply that universally. And that's where the centralized versus decentralized aspect operates in, and with any field, and also with what's endogenous versus exogenous of these authorities that people worship versus coming from within. I wanted to read this quote here. Let me see if I can find it. We are told to focus. We are told by experts to focus within. While looking within is wonderful, the magic will happen in your life when you focus from within. You will then be focusing from the viewpoint and perspective of your true self. You will then be seeing everything from the perspective of quote-unquote source. This viewpoint and perspective is something that few ever see the world from. When you do this, you always experience bliss regardless of the external circumstances. If you focus your attention within, who is doing the focusing? If you focus your attention from within, which means from the source that is you, magic will happen in your life. You can then see everything from the standpoint of being a quote-unquote witness or observer. Seeing everything from the perspective of quote-unquote source makes everything look different. This is the secret of the ages. That's from Kevin Trudeau, who I've collected his books over the years, and he's starting to show more and more of these so-called secret societies teachings. And it pretty much aligns with the different kinds of hyper-awareness technologies you guys are familiar with, and of these other, you know, Eastern Indian traditions. And the whole thing is that, at least from my understanding, is that there is nothing that's not of God. And when you operate from that, that everything is living and fluid. Anybody who's had a lucid dream out of body, you can easily, like, even the very air itself is just alive. And that's coming true. Back from that kind of resurrection and of realization, of lucid waking, you know, it is just, you're not the same after that.
Okay, I can add a lot to that.
Yeah, please.
And I already lost my... I was going to just agree with what you were saying, and there was something else I was going to add. Make an outline for me, because I lost my train of
thought.
Yeah,
I
was focusing on something else and trying to tune into...
For me, getting it on paper helps, but there's this Boyd Rice book called Standing in... I think Standing in Two Circles... Caleb, maybe you could correct me, but The idea of us in the center of the cyclone and standing in multiple circles as being in multiple dimensions.
Yeah.
And we understand. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like 12 different dimensions. Like I'm focusing on many different thought forms all at once in that sense. I was trying to start my music, like the 422 or 432.
The hertz, 432 hertz.
Yeah, the 432 hertz. But that's what split my focus. So I know we're recording, and I don't know where to go with what I was going to say.
No, but this is about resonance, reverberation, and music. There's a term that is used called Ursong, right? And the command to look, there's also the command to hear. So you, it's not hypnosis, but what is it naturally that captures people's attention, which is their energy? And you do that with music, right?
I think I got this fixed now. So let's back up. What were the topics we were talking about? Just so I didn't mean to lose focus.
We'll just talk about anything. I mean, what did you want to, from your viewpoint?
What were you talking about is all I'm saying.
I mean, as far as the last point I was trying to make is that these,
yeah,
what's presented on the surface is not just the opposite, but like apocalyptic, like the cross being basically a vampiric symbol because of how its energy harvesting aspects historically
okay,
and just, yeah.
So the cross is, it's actually derivative, maybe, I could be completely wrong, of the ox. Like, it's very cross-like. But there's a, well, there's a different sacred geometry to it, actually. If you, so there's the Pisces, it's like the double, the intersecting circle, the flower of life, it was strange the way a lot of that came to my understanding of it is a lot different than the way it used to, but the pyramids do seem unique, you know, in their form and healing even. I keep several pyramids around.
Yeah, same. I have a PVC pipe pyramid. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You give me something to go on because I'm running out of fuel or something I was going to say and I lost the train of thought.
Okay. Now, when I was reading that quote about you operating from source and even like in health, it's endogenous. Stop relying
That's
on this
what
exogenous
we're talking
stuff.
About.
Yeah.
We're
ahead.
Talking about like yeah, that higher level sort of well, there's a point, so today I looked out the window. The winter time is the best time to look at the sun. I did the sun staring. I'll start from the beginning. I'll just back up a little bit. It was like 2012, whole apocalypse was going to come. Well, you know, but so that's misinterpreted. And I have something written here. Like I'm using my phone to look it up here. So I think it was Greek. The word apocalypse is derived from ancient Greek word apocalypsis, which means uncovering, unveiling, or revelation. So all this that's going on in the world, and yeah, it is madness. It makes me sick in my body. I don't like to see it anymore. The internet and all this, it's like weirdness, like South Park. I don't know, that was super weird. And I don't like to see that or watch that, whatever that's about. Like the political stuff. I can't really keep up with any of it anymore. I don't watch the news. It's really strange to me. But I'll finish here. An uncovering, an unveiling, or a revelation. It combines capo, away, broth, and calyptin, to cover, literally meaning to take off a cover or disclose knowledge previously hidden, like an unveiling, the thing of the veil. It refers to a divine disclosure of heavenly secrets, not merely instruction. So, like, that probably started some point back then, and it's further gone on. But it's especially, like, not in my journal, all the stuff. I first found. I'm not sure what started me, like the interest in the pyramids. I guess if I had a point, not sure what it would be, so I'm not trying to go. That's all I got to say about it.
No, I can relate. I'm in big on pyramids too. People can look up Charles Zeese, Zeise. You can construct your own pyramid using PVC pipes, and he has videos on that in a pyramid book of it using it for healing, for growing fruits, preserving them longer. Like I had a PVC pipe pyramid in not right next to my bed years ago, and it like
Oh
boosted up my
yeah,
dreams.
like
Go ahead.
the copper pyramids and stuff that those people like meditate in, that's really cool. Like I could make something like that. I mean, I'm good at fabrication and stuff like that too, so I don't know, like that might be another project eventually.
Yeah, I've seen some cool copper pyramids people build around their beds, and they'll fill it with
Yeah, dude.
organite resins and things, and or even just little tiny copper pyramids. People keep their supplements or food that would be more likely to spoil, and that'll keep that fresher longer. And you can do a lot of tests, like people will do the lemon test or different things where they'll put
Oh, yeah.
stuff under that and see, and then one lemon under a pyramid, another lemon not under a pyramid, and then look at the difference in the rot that occurs.
And even like the rice test, you say like thank you to one, and you tell the other one like fuck you, you piece of shit, like or you don't have to say that, but you could. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on here, but like
Yeah,
you'd
there
be
was that
rude.
that Asian scientist that did studies with water with that.
Yeah, Miyamoto, or
Yeah,
I think that's his
Miyamoto,
name.
yeah.
Masaru Emoto, yep.
Yeah.
Masaru Emoto, or I think Miyamoto's Nintendo or something. I don't know.
So at times like that's good is like anytime you're stirring something, stirring a drink, water, all that
Yeah.
imprints, honey. You can always infuse that with thanks or gratitude. Yogurt is another good
Yes.
one, being
That
alive food.
it adds structure. So it makes your water H2O3. It changes the molecular structure of it. And also, I saw the other day that the toroidal, the whirlwind, or you know, like the stirring fashion creates like a portal, so you can have a moment, like you can create a frame in that moment and connect it to another moment that you're stirring. Like, that hurts my head a little bit, but that's interesting, you know?
Yeah, let's get into the energy device thing. Sanji, how did you get into, I suppose we could start with Shungite, but tensor rings and other devices, and you've been experimenting also?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about it on some of the other podcasts. You know, Shungite was my kind of introduction to the world of energy tools. It's something that when we had met up at kind of a gathering of like minds, you had some in your pocket and you just handed me it and said, what do you pick up on this? How does this feel to you? And, you know, and then you had been showing me some of the old S4 stickers from Shungite Reality. And we had a whole conversation about it over lunch and just felt a pull towards checking more of it out. And since then, I've really did a deep dive and kind of, you know, if there's some kind of energy tech out there, I've checked it out for the most part, where I've tried to, you know, learn what I could from device makers that were well kind of respected, as well as, you know, feeling a little bit of a pull, because there's definitely stuff out there that is very aesthetically pleasing and very like art pieces, but they're not necessarily functional energy devices. And there's a lot of things that can be dangerous too. You know, some of these energy pendants and things, if you hit them with a radiation detector, will come up as being radioactive. You know, you have to hit it with a Geiger counter and things like that, because when you're pulling raw rare earth minerals out of the earth, you don't, you know, depending on what part of the world they're coming from, it can be dangerous. And so you want to do things in a way that, you know, you're kind of testing what you're working with, and you're making sure you're being safe. And there's a lot of scams out there too, but I kind of, through slow testing, as well as maybe spending a little more money than I should have at the time, just out of curiosity to try to figure out what would be useful for me in my own practices. For a long time, I resisted anything that would have any kind of electricity going through it, just to have more of that ambient etheric energy, making sure I'm working with that. But yeah, I mean, it started with Shungite, you know, Organite, tensor rings. But then there's like electroculture, there's selenite, people, different resin mediums. So, you know, whether it's selenite or concrete or resin or beeswax or whatever, you know, material you might be working with, you know, orgone blankets, orgone accumulators, cloud busters, zappers, all kinds of stuff that I've, you know, kind of explored, a lot of, you know, stuff that, Carl Hans Welts and Don Croft kind of started with, you know, stuff with radionics, psychotronics, all of these, energy tech, and, you know, even, you know, people like Diabolus Rex, who was building his Ragnarok engine and things like that. All of, you know, learned a lot just from different weird sources and just the idea of building things as an extension of your magic. Like you could basically build a machine and set it up and run and then walk away from it. And then that's, you know, kind of almost like a tulpa that you set in place and set in motion. One thing that I've done for myself and something I might do for others if they want is to make like energy candles, infusing tools into things, into a base that would then burn down into that base and leave you with an energy device that has an intention set into it. Things like that. Really like using shungite in building materials. You know, painted my bedroom with about 6 layers of shungite and silver infused paint. And yeah, I've heard of people like, you know, if they put that into the walls, they'll put chopped up stones and then put that into the masonry in their walls or on their floor and create bigger orgone chambers like that. James DeMeo out here in Oregon too, that was a big draw for me. And his orgone biophysical research lab, he built several buildings out there that I'd always hoped to go visit before his passing, but never really got really had too much communication with him, but it was something I had hoped to maybe try to see if I could go visit him at some point, just to kind of be around his take on some of those, and you know, Wilhelm Reich's kind of his exact experiments, and see what, you know, differences there might be. So I've just peeked around anything that I thought might be useful. You know, we talk about endogenous versus exogenous. Obviously, it's a very exogenous approach. I don't think it's anything you need. I think what it is helpful for is to kind of help tune into things that, you know, you can work with and are already there. But similar to a wand, you know, it doesn't have to be, it's an extension of you that you're working with. So it doesn't have to be something that, you know, you spend a lot of money on or that kind of thing. I was curious, so I did some of that, like to buy stuff up. Like, for example, I have some of the Croft's original orgonite. I have some of Carl Hanswelt's original orgonite, because I wanted to get my hands on really authentic stuff to see, like, what, you know, I bought one of Walt's resonators, things like that, where it was a little bit of money to kind of experiment and figure things out. But I think I've kind of learned from the best at this point. And when I go to make my own creations, I kind of know what I'm doing now. So it's been fun and interesting for me. It's been a fun hobby and craft and something that kind of hope to pass on to other people, but it's just been fun for me as a homeowner to really create an environment that's conducive to energy and to heart, you know, cultivating energy.
So you found them as healing devices, maybe helping dreams. What are some of the benefits you've gotten from them?
Really, I found an addictive quality to it. And that's why I had to stop buying stuff, because I started to accumulate clutter. And now I'm at a place where, like, I could have a little Etsy store or start to get rid of some of the things that I've, because it's not, I'm trying to accumulate things. These are objects that have, you know, I'm forgetting his name at the moment. He's an orgonite maker, extension tools, but he calls them powerful paperweights. You know, I mean, like, at a certain point, you have all this clutter on a bookshelf, and it can start to get to be. But I was always so curious when I'd feel a pull, and it's almost kind of like with shungite, it has this addictive quality to it, because the energy radiance, for me at least, is so delicious that I'm attracted to crystals and other things that have this energy that they're radiating. So it's very easy for me to just like accumulate all of that. So at this point, I've accumulated more than I need, and I'm kind of pacing myself and not really, you know, getting more collectibles and maybe getting rid of some things. But I've learned a lot about what works. And so for me, a lot of what was driving my interest in it was the addictive quality of the energy that I was getting from it, but feeling very uplifted, a lot of mood benefits, certainly health benefits. I mean, everything we talk about with shungite, and a lot of this stuff for me, if it's not paired with shungite, it doesn't have the same effect, or it doesn't. Shungite really cleans and transmutes the energy. So when you pair it with something else like tensors or organite, it keeps things running smoothly and cleanly. So I don't know that I would have ever incorporated all of these things without it, you know, like I wouldn't use a zapper that doesn't have that incorporated in the circuit. And so, you know, things like that. Yeah, shungite's really opened the gate for me with all of these things. And health, healing, energy work, all of that, just expanding. Radionics, using that to tap in and almost like spell work, where you're able to get outcomes based on frequencies you're tapping into. A lot of really interesting synchronicities, some of the like Ho'oponopono frequency that Walt had put out, you know, found gong, singing bowls that were at Derek's shop, the old mystical wear spot, that were at that exact frequency. And so just kind of piling up like all of these layers of things that to work with that, just on the daily, to kind of, you know, create an atmosphere for myself to work through.
Yeah, and I should preface what you're saying is that you're using shungite with silver. I don't think there's an instance where you haven't used just shungite by itself, right? I mean, you do notice the difference of the one with silver versus without.
But absolutely, but I do use both. I mean, I'll use both, but I typically infuse it with shungite if it's not already tumbled, or if it's not already S4 powder. I've created my own S4 because all you have to do is combine colloidal silver with shungite. If you soak some shungite stones in colloidal silver overnight, it'll completely evaporate and absorb into the stone, and you'll have a permanent, you know, it's not the same saturate, you know, the same level of coating that you'll get in a tumbled piece, but it does penetrate deep into the shungite and will have those same silver properties I've found. So I've used a lot from Mystical Wares and Shungite Reality, and pendants and pieces and all of that. And I have bracelets. I've had some specialty pieces that I had them reach out to me for, to work with them on. I had Derek make me a mala, shungite mala. What else?
So you were mentioning Mystical Wares, that they're currently known as cosmicshungite.com, the updated version. And in the Shungite Reality Rumble.com station, there is a video of a registered nurse showing the blood before and after the silvered shungite and the difference when it's with the cell phone versus without. And then you're mentioning Walt, and that's Walt Silva who's created shungite. So people just can put his first and last name in shungite and see different energy devices he has. And as unbelievable as it sounds, I bought one of his Cloudbusters with the shungite, which covers hundreds of miles and has been able to reverse the drought of California back in 2021. And you can check out the details of that in the cosmicreality.com podcast archive, because the Northern California wildfires had been pretty consistent. Like in the movie Blade Runner 2099, they had the orange skies And we've had that, and it stopped on 2021 when I initiated the grounding of the Shanghai Cloudbuster. So very cool items, and you don't necessarily need to buy the actual physical object. You can use its astral double through intention. And we've covered that numerous times in the Shanghai Reality Show. Right. So I'm immersed just as much as you are, but I'll be more focused in the Shanghai realm to the point where I've been able to work with the consciousness behind it. And at least at the general perspective, it could come as a black lion for the regular Shanghai, and then as a white lion in the silver saturated form. And that's been, again, discussed in the archives. So dig in if you want, or just talk to the entity itself. So I don't even know if you need to buy the actual thing. You could just call it down, but that's just like with anything else. If you want an herb, just talk to the consciousness of the herb, and then you can work with it. Link, how about your own or Sanji?
Oh, just one thing on what you're saying there. That's been my experience as well. My first kind of real tapping in there was bathing with some stones, and placed the stones in the bath with me and put my head under the water, and was kind of just seeking advice at the time and thinking about the issues I was going through, and really got a lot of good feedback from what felt like some kind of sentience that came through the water. And since then, it's something I've really connected with a lot too. And we'll go lucid dream out at the Shungite caves, and something I believe we've both experienced. And yeah, it feels the energy feels feminine, and like it came from somewhere far away to Earth for a purpose and out of caring for life here, started life here.
Oh yeah, when you were on the Shungite show past couple of times, I think you covered that. Not the last one per se, but the one before, where you were describing the same thing. And then the other two main hosts, the Shungite beekeeper, who's also an energy healer, energy device maker, and Nancy, same, and an energy electronic warfare specialist in the NSA equivalent of the Army, same experiences too. So it's like, there's not like there's a disagreement here. And it's up to the individual to test it out and what works for you individually, because it customizes to your needs.
It also for me with, the kind of the consecration of my mother's ashes with Shungite, you know, how people would go like speak to the bees to have the bees tell their ancestors a message. It felt like with the connection there that bees have with Shungite, that was a way for me to open the gate from, you know, my own family. So that's something where it's taken on many, many meanings in an impactful way. So
circles within circles. Link, how about you?
I was gonna say a lot of things. So for one, I have a lot to say about Shungite, but I was messing with my settings. If you go to audio, click your the three dots, click settings, audio. It says audio sound for musicians. So I don't know if I sound different, but
You got some background music there. Very cool.
I got the 432. I turned it up a little bit there too.
Thank you.
It's like Sanji,
maybe you could check out that setting and we can get that gong going
I got my guitar here. I got my drum. I was gonna see if you could hear it while I got it in my hand here.
Play us something.
You hear that?
Yep. How about your guitar? Oh, that's pretty clear. That's great.
So how's that? Can you hear that?
That's a good musical portion of the program. Very cool.
Heck yeah, I figured out the thing. Okay. All right. So the Shanghai, since you guys gifted me that, my first time on the podcast, it's too much to put into words. I mean, it's made things difficult, not in a bad way, in a good way. It's made things much to quantum, I guess, to even try to record and put it all into words, I guess, depending on what you asked about, I'd be able to talk more about it. But, so one, I take care of my body. I've done a lot for my health and all that. Every day I stay true to my regimen and the things I take. But the Shanghai, it is like its own consciousness, like a healing field. I always keep it close. There's one that I keep by my bedside. It was a tower that I found that costed $33. I mean, 33 is like one of my numbers. So, I keep it on two silver coins. I have the stickers behind my phone. There's one on my water tank, one on my router, and various around the house. There's a small one that I super glued silver to. I'm not sure if super glue is bad for it or anything, but I carry that around in my pocket too. It just seems to add a certain level of coherence. And my thoughts never come to like a stalemate. I have like a continuous flow of what I want to do, what I'm going to do, and then I just do it. That's all I'm going to say about that for now. Let you guys go on.
Yeah, people want to start out with the one with the silver in it. So go to cosmicshanghai.com. I was going to initially recommend the resin with the silver and Shanghai, but that's not up yet since they're transferring from Mystical Wares to another location. But I mean, I guess the rubber, the small rubber circles, or even starting with the sticker. So if you're going to obviously first put it on your cell phone, you don't want to peel it. You want to put it in between the case and then the phone itself. And then just from that, it'll
between my case, the perfect one that you gave me, one of them. And I gave one of them to my girlfriend at the time. So she has that probably still. But yeah, I'm not sure if I had another one, but I put one in my dad's wallet too. Like I hid it in there.
Yeah, when Kalis was in with me in the Shanghai show a couple of days ago, we're talking about the glyphosate, which is in everything. Even in France, like they've banned it, but it's in people's, like they do, I think it's blood test or it's in their system. Like, you know, they don't have it technically in the country, but how is it? Because it's in the air. Like, especially if you live in the West Coast, in the States, and then you live by a golf course, it's even worse. So with structuring your biofield and then, you know, us being water beings, structuring that, you have the silver shungite on you, and it's recommended to keep it in your heart space area. But you don't necessarily need to have the expensive pendants. You could get the bracelets, even just the rubber, the shungite rubber, and just have a piece of it in your pocket, and that's enough to stabilize your biological electrical field, let's say.
I had great, like I shared yesterday on the shungite show, I had great results. Well, I wouldn't say great results, but I had noticeable results just from a little bit of it. And where I had put it was literally right in the heart space area. And so the effect, I think, was profound enough for me to take it a lot more seriously than I have been personally. So I do recommend Shungite. I do recommend, you know, for the listeners to jump into it if they're so inclined. It's there's something to it for sure.
Yeah, don't be freaking lazy. Don't go to Amazon and eBay. Go to cosmicshungite.com. Supporting a small business. He's the first Shungite beekeeper. Been doing it since 2017. And they're pretty affordable considering how much silver is. It should be like over $100 each for those stickers. So get them while they're pretty cheap right now.
Yeah, I absolutely support the website also. I told it, I told the local crystal shop about them and the website. I showed them my laminated sticker. That's the one I was keeping in my wallet. And that's the one I put in my dad's wallet. And I wanted him to have it close to him. But the silver and the shungite, the stickers specifically, are easy to keep close to you. But even though I got one on my phone, I keep one in my wallet plus the piece of shungite in my pocket that I wrapped with silver twine myself. But yeah, you go on.
Yeah, it's a form of magic and technology, really, with where people have taken it since 2014, Nancy Hopkins, and then with Walt Silva adding it to these cloudbusters and resonators, these energy devices. Get one for your fridge, the magnet, and for your car, like it would save about 20-25% gas. I measured it, if you get a magnet on there. Just endless uses, really. So we passed an hour now. Any topic you guys want to get into? I mean, we can go into anything.
You have been listening to Awake versus Aware, a production of CosmicReality.com. Thank you for listening.